Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Ever wish that certain things would go a lot faster? For us here at Brummie Mummies, it's the kids getting their shoes on and out the door so we're not late for school. Or do you wish that some things were a bit more reliable? Like actually being handed the school note to say they need a costume ahead of the day it's due? Well, we can't control the speed of our kids. Luckily for us Brummie Mummies, TalkTalk's Future Fibre is now here in Birmingham. And with speeds up to a whopping 900 megabits per second, it's fast enough to handle anything you throw at it. And it's great TalkTalk value too. Future Fibre might not speed up the school run, but when it comes to downloading our podcast or making sure your work calls don't cut out in the holidays because your son's playing video games or your daughter's streaming TV, ultra-fast and ultra-reliable broadband using the latest technology is just what you need. To find out more, search TalkTalk Future Fibre, subject to local availability. Today I want to tell you about a festival I've been to nearly every year for 13 years with my kids. The Just So Festival offers the perfect place for families to escape their everyday lives for a weekend to play and adventure together, making wonderful childhood memories as they explore a truly magical woodland wonderland. It takes place in the grounds of the glorious Road Hall, near Stoke-on-Trent, which is full of stunning forest glades to explore. Over the years, we've done everything from retro discos and Russian Cossack dancing to giant pillow fights and laughter yoga. We've joined lantern parades after dark, watched outdoor cinema in a natural amphitheatre, and made fox costumes to compete in a tribal tournament. One time we spotted a fairy queen singing opera high up in the trees. Another time we found ourselves in the middle of a giant impromptu game of hide and seek. The idea is that something unexpected and slightly spectacular is around every corner. There's even a glade for babies and fun stuff for teenagers too. Welcome back to Brummie Mummies. My name is Zoe Chamberlain. I'm a journalist, author and mum. I launched Brummie Mummies as a community for families to help people to connect both online and in person. My goal is to share with you stories from the most inspiring mums and dads to help you find out how they juggle family life and everything that comes with it. The Just So Festival is the brainchild of two mums, Sarah Bird and Rowan Cannon, who loved the idea of taking their kids to festivals, but found the reality wasn't quite so much fun. So they decided to do it on their own terms. Let's find out more from Sarah Bird now. Hi, Sarah. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Oh, no, thanks for inviting me. It's lovely to be here.
Well, as you know, I'm a big fan of the Just So Festival. So for anyone who has never heard of it, has never been, can you describe the festival and tell me what it's all about?
Yeah, sure. So Just So Festival takes place each August, middle of August, on a site near Stoke-on-Trent. It's a weekend camping festival for families. And really, it invites audiences to step outside of their day-to-day world and be immersed in just a slightly chaotic, anarchic dreamscape of art and literature and circus and dance and a little bit of nonsense and mischief and, just with like-minded people, connecting to nature, hanging out outdoors, climbing trees, eating, sleeping, drinking under the stars.
Oh, yes. And there is something really magical about it. I don't know quite how you do it, but it doesn't feel like any other kind of festival. I mean, I know a lot of parents will be used to taking their kids to places where they'll see CBeebies characters, or they'll have like plastic toys or soft play. There's none of that at all at the Just So Festival, and I'm guessing that's very deliberate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess we think of it when we're programming the festival, we think of the festival, it grew out of a love of stories and storytelling. And I guess what we want to do is we want to take families on an adventure, on an exploration, and we want, we've always, it sounds a little bit corny, but we've always thought of it as a collaboration between us and the audience and the performers and artists, and everybody who comes to it plays their part in quite a finely crafted ecosystem. But it is the sum of its parts, you know. It's the passions and enthusiasms, it is the craziness of five-year-olds who are prepared to dance like they've never danced before, or sing like, you know, at the top of their voices, or it's 100% a collaboration with the audience. And you know, you'll know that from having been, Zoe, that, but things like the Carnival of the Animals, where we invite audiences to dress up and to find their animal tribe and to play games with them over the weekend. It's all about, I think we see ourselves as the people who create the conditions, but then it's all about the audience and the performers and everybody else, like bringing it to life and breathing, you know, and excitement and magic into it, for sure.
I know that's the highlight for my kids, the tribal tournament. Can you describe how that works?
Yeah, so it came about, I think, because we recognised that people want to connect to other people, and they want to, it's a brilliant way for, we want families to be able to interact and to break down the barriers and the boundaries that might prevent that from happening. So so we have seven animal tribes, and audience choose whichever animal they would like to align to. They dress up. And when we first started it, we thought, you know, it would just be a really nice way of people getting together, making friends. And it's a little bit competitive, but, you know, there's that sense of, so you might be a frog, and then all the frogs will get together at some point over the weekend and maybe have like a game of leapfrog, or they'll learn a frog chant. They all dress up like frogs. When you're walking around the festival and you see someone who's dressed in the same animal outfit as you are, it's just a brilliant way to like give someone a high five or like say hi. And you get that sense of camaraderie, I think, that makes the festival feel quite unique and special, because you feel like we're all in this together. So then over the weekend, people do things, they dance, they sing, they tell jokes, they do things in order to gain gold pebbles. Then we count up the gold pebbles, all a little bit Blue Peter style from when we were kids, and you have to like, the scores go up. We have a scoreboard over the weekend. There's a lot of nonsense and mischief that goes into it. And then on the Sunday evening, the kind of finale of the festival is all of the animal tribes coming together, and we announce who's won, who's got the most. But I mean, although it's a competition, it's definitely also, you know, hopefully kids take it really, really seriously. Well, whole families take it really seriously, I guess. We definitely do this whole, you know, there's more that unites us than divides us. And I think people do find that they, you know, it's not so competitive that they can't enjoy it even if they don't win.
Yes. And talk me through what happens through the festival from kind of the moment you arrive. There's the archway that you go under, and then kind of what are set things that happen throughout the festival. So what would people expect if they come?
Yeah, so people arrive, they pitch up their tents. I mean, you can come for the weekend or you can come for the day, but you pitch up your tent and then arrive in the festival, get your festival wristband, and then you're free to go and explore. And there are kind of seven or eight different areas that are loosely themed. There's stuff in the woods and the forested area. There are stages. There are tented spaces. There are some barns that are quite good for in case there's inclement weather, which there nearly always is a little bit of inclement weather.
Yes.
And And then, yeah, people can, there's a few things that you can book onto, like more dedicated workshops, but generally everything is open and free and drop in. And that's one of the lovely things, I think, in terms of like following your children's passions and enthusiasms, is that there's such a variety of different art forms on there. You can absolutely be led by your children and what they want to see and do on any particular day. I think quite often people say, you know, they come with their program highlighted of, we're going to see this, we're going to do that. And, oh, my child loves circus, so we're going to go and do this circus workshop. And then actually, it's the surprising things, you know, it's like maybe a bit of opera in the woods or like a photography thing or just the things that maybe you wouldn't. And I think that's the lovely thing about it, is that you can explore and you can find new things that you will fall in love with over the weekend.
That's definitely what's happened to us over the years. I mean, I just remember when my kids were really little and suddenly walking around a kind of forest glade and finding an opera singing fairy elevated into the tree. And it was just, they were just mesmerised by her. And then the next moment we were in a marquee doing Russian Cossack dancing.
it's the unexpected, isn't it?
Yeah, and then one delightful time seeing Mr. Frog, the leader of the frog tribe, starting this hide and seek thing, which became massive with loads and loads of people playing hide and seek in the forest. And it was all very impromptu. I think that's the lovely part of it, that it's all very impromptu, or at least it feels like it.
Yeah, and that's what you want people to feel. You want people to feel a sense of serendipity and that, you know, for all the kind of, like, you might then miss out on something that you really wanted to see, there's that sense of, oh, I'm just here, I'm in the right place at the right time, and this magical thing is happening in front of me. And that's absolutely the kind of conditions that we want to create. And so there are also, I mean, there are brilliant bands, there's great music, there are silent discos, there's brilliant food. We love all the food vendors that come to Just So. I've never seen such a queue for corn on the cob in all my life, but it's got a really special and unique feel, I think. And I think one of our favourite things is over the weekend, you can see when people arrive that they always feel a little bit more kind of structured and then by the time Sunday arrives, everybody's kind of like thrown their inhibitions out the window. They've relaxed into it. People just seem a lot more relaxed and like prepared to go with the craziness that unfolds in front of them.
And you haven't mentioned the lantern parade as well. That's always really pretty.
Yeah, we love the lantern. I mean, there's quite a lot of like making and doing, and it's that sense of there are small, intimate things, and then there are also large scale spectaculars, and it's getting the balance right between those that's really important.
So how did you come up with the idea in the first place?
I think it was a range of different things. You know, having been to festivals myself with my kids, and but also we were very inspired by stories and storytelling. My background was working in bookshops and a love of literature, and wanting to bring those to life, take them off the page and into a beautiful woodland space. But also my co-director Rowan has four quite boisterous children, and you know, taking them to art galleries and museums and concert halls has always been a challenge for her. So taking all that brilliant arts activity that was happening indoors and putting it outdoors, I think was definitely the initial impetus. And I think we felt like we could go to festivals that were like focused on, here's the music festival and then here's some stuff for families on the side. And what we really wanted to do was create something that was entirely for families, that was much more democratic in that. We wanted to put on events where, you know, kids and parents would do stuff alongside each other on a par. It wouldn't be about, you know, separating the family out or the kids doing something while the parents stood back and had a coffee. It was about children seeing their parents be ridiculous and be silly and playful, and reminding us all to, you know, the power of play and playing together, and how important and brilliant that can be.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, actually. I mean, I think that's something that's really key to this festival, that it is as much for parents as it is for children. And how important do you think play is for parents as well as children?
Oh, I think it's absolutely huge. And it's so easy, isn't it, to forget to play. I think, you know, you get bogged down in life. And that's why, you know, we've always said it's about stepping away from your day-to-day life. But play is the most powerful tool, I think. You know, for children, for helping them be able to think about being able to create and innovate and build their own worlds, and to do that through play is the most empowering thing, building confidence and resilience and just that sense of like limitless opportunities. I think if there's anything that we want the festival to do, we want it to feel like that, like it's limitless and that the opportunities abound around every corner and that the world is full of joy and delight and it's an abundant and rich, exciting place to be. But ensuring that parents can do that as well, that they can, you know, throw away the structure and the framework and just go with things and play and be silly. I think it's a brilliant thing, you know, especially when you see families dancing together. I think the thing is that when you take away that kind of power structure and hierarchy of like parents being there in a supporting role, because actually parents generally can't dance better than kids anyway. It's about it's about enthusiasm and how much you're prepared to put into it. And kids nearly always outstrip their parents. So when you see that happening alongside each other and doing that across all the different things I think it's really, you know, it's about changing the nature of the relationship in the family because you've changed the roles. It's not that the parents are there to support. So we're all learning from each other. And what that does is that I think it creates shared memories that are really quite special compared to the other kinds of memories that we build together as families.
It really does, yes. And one of my favourite things is seeing all the dads stressed up and just getting so involved. It's like everybody who goes gets completely submerged within it.
Yeah, there was a lovely quote quite early on, and I can't remember, it's in the Times or the Guardian or something, about if only real life was like the Just So Festival.
Oh,
and you're like,
yes.
But actually, why shouldn't it be? You know, that should be... It should be that there's another world which is a little bit boring and drab, but actually that's real life. That's and trying to bring a little bit more of that into our day to day is a force for good in the world, I think.
Do you think it's important for us to spend quality, concentrated time together as a family in the great outdoors?
Yeah, I mean, none of us do it enough, probably, do we? And definitely over the last few years, everybody's become much more aware of the power of nature and just how important that is to us and how much that can offer us resilience. And I think, you know, when everything was stripped back because of COVID and the pandemic, the constants were, you know, that spring of 2020 was the weather was beautiful and the bird song was so loud because of the lack of traffic and background noise. It felt like actually you can take everything else away, but nature is still going to do its thing. You know, it's going to be brighter and more beautiful than ever. And I think for us, that offered us loads of solace and we held on to it so dearly, and hopefully people will carry on holding on to that. But yeah, I think it's incredibly, incredibly important. I think the only way we can learn to protect and care for nature is to be immersed in it, is to know the value of it. And to know the value of it, we have to spend time in it, really, don't we? So yeah, it's really important. I mean, it's important for us. I think also it takes away a lot of the, it breaks down those barriers, you know, that going inside of buildings constrains us in terms of how we play and how we react. It's in a slightly more intimidating, more formal space. It takes all that away. So it gives kind of permission to all of that stuff that I've been talking about, play and you know, dropping your inhibitions. That's much easier when you're outdoors, when you're in the woods, than it is in a, you know, in a room, in a gallery or a concert hall.
And it enables us to get off our screens as well, doesn't it? Our phones, and reconnect.
Yeah, definitely. And that's not to say, you know, I mean, we'd be hypocritical if we didn't say, you know, that our kids were all the amount of time that we've sat our kids in front of CBeebies or CBBC so that we can do the organising. they're probably more screen aware than most. But I think it's really valuable and important to connect to nature. I mean, and as a child, it's so vibrant and bright and brilliant. And the more time that you spend in it, the more opportunities you find in it. But, you know, climbing trees and building bridges and dens and, you know, looking at wildlife and stuff. Kids love all that just as much as they love their screens. And getting away from the screens for a weekend is definitely no bad thing.
So how has the festival grown over the years?
Oh, in ways that we could never have imagined, Zoe. You know, I know you were there at that first festival when we, like, had no idea what we were doing. I think if we had have done, we might never have gone there. But you know, we used to dream about, imagine if, like, one time we could, like, work on it full time, because we were just volunteering on it to start with. And then at every turn, it has its own momentum. And because it is, like, this real kind of family effort and everybody's involved in it, it feels like there's no stopping it sometimes. So it hurtles on. And now it happens in Brazil. And 2022 will be the first year it's happening in Milan in Italy in June. And it's happened in New Zealand. And so, you know, it's taken us on the most crazy, brilliant adventures. We've also started doing other festivals and events. We do loads of work with Chester Zoo. So that whole thing about, like, wildlife and nature, but the work that we get to do with them and hearing about the passion and enthusiasm of all the animal experts is amazing. But yeah, we've worked with Hampton Court Palace and the Forestry Commission, like loads of people that we'd never have dreamed we'd get to work with. So it feels a little bit like a roller coaster, and you just, every time we think, oh, this is it, we've made it, this is brilliant, then something else brilliant tops it. So it's also, you know, the last few years with COVID, it's been a bit of a scary, risky place to be as well. You know, festivals have been you know, postponed, or, you know, constantly coming up with plan B, C, D, E and F as to how we'll be able to put it on. So it definitely, you can't rest on your laurels. It's an exciting environment to be working in. But yeah, it's grown. But one of the things that we haven't really grown is for the last kind of 5 or 6 years at least, is we haven't grown our audience size. We've put on other events rather than grow the audience, because I think as a family going to a festival, if you go to something that has like 20, 30,000 people there, that is so overwhelming and intimidating. And that sense of, I might lose my kids in this crowd, or yeah, we want parents to be able to relax and give their children a bit more freedom, to allow them to run off, to explore, to be distracted and diverted by stuff without. And you can't do that when you have such overwhelmingly big numbers. So we're small for a reason, and it's because we think that that's the right size for the festival to be. And we won't ever grow the numbers of just so beyond. It's got 5,000 people come to it, and it'll never be bigger than that, because it's what feels comfortable for us. And we know from audience feedback that it's what feels comfortable for them. So although we as an organisation have grown, and the festival has grown in its ambitions and our wish to put on new, high quality, exciting, and, you know, we never get bored of programming it. We come up with a gazillion ideas of magical ways we want to whisk audiences off into, like, dream worlds. And but yeah, it hasn't grown in terms of numbers for quite a while.
Yeah, it would really change the dynamics of it, wouldn't it, if there were more people there. So tell me, in what ways has that just so changed your outlook on life?
It's made me more ambitious, I guess. It's made me, it's definitely instilled me with a sense of actually anything is possible. And I think I was probably a lot more risk averse as a person in, like, my outlook on everything, you know, whether it was about my kids, you know, having like risky play or whether it was about just the choices that I would make for myself in my life. I was definitely a more risk-averse person before we did Just So. So it's... And taking away or changing your appetite for risk in life, I think, opens up so many opportunities. And there are times when that goes wrong. But for all of those times when it goes wrong and you take on board too much risk, the times where you get opportunities that you would never have got otherwise, it's led to a more rich, exciting, vibrant, brilliant world, I think. Yeah, it's incredible, I think, how empowering it is.
Yes, definitely. And how has it changed your family's life? Because your family is involved in it all now, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. you might have to ask them. I think for good. I hope that what I've talked about there has... I hope that the rest of my family would agree and say that that's also been empowering for them. I think more than anything, though, Just So relies on an amazing cohort of volunteers. And they come, they spend 10 days with us, and they throw themselves into building this and running this amazing festival for the weekend. Quite a lot of them are often young undergraduates. Some of them are families, some of them are older local people. But quite often they're kind of young 20-somethings who are at university or they're looking for something to do with their summer. And my kids growing up, seeing those kids doing that, I think encouraged my children to think, oh, I should volunteer, or here's the benefits of like volunteering, or like, I just think they're amazing role models. They're so inspiring so that's been an absolute gift for my kids, you know, for them to get to hang out with those volunteers and see them. I mean, they also get to see all these amazing performers, and that makes you think, actually, do you know, what do I want to be when I grow up? Or maybe I want to be an aerialist or a fairy in the tree, or maybe I want to be a sound technician, or maybe I want, like, it opens up so many new ideas of jobs and careers and pathways. More than anything, I hope it's made them think that they would want to do something they loved with their lives. When you see people who have a passion and enthusiasm, whether that's for like tightrope walking or for cooking corn on the cob or whatever it is, when you see people loving what they do, I just couldn't wish for my kids to do anything in their lives other than find a job that they love. And to be able to be paid and make a living or find your way in the world doing something that you love doing, it feels like the most important thing. And so I think the festival has offered them that in abundance. So it's offered them like role models and visibility of that in abundance.
Yes, I mean, such amazing experiences. And how do you keep coming up with so many different ideas? And how do you ensure that they always kind of fit with the ethos of the Just So?
We come up with a lot of ideas, and they don't always, not everything always works, but I guess you get a feel for what does work. You have to look beyond the obvious and try and find the ridiculous, you know. And I think if you asked any of the team who work on it, some of their favourite things would be things like the custard catwalk, where we made like, and the team had to stay up making vats and vats and vats of custard, which, I don't know if people know this about custard, but that it's, if you have enough force on it, it can be a solid as well as a liquid. And so seeing people running across a custard catwalk or the jelly fight, and I mean, the jelly fight was one of my favourites because there was a moment right at the very end when clearly everybody had thrown their jelly. It was all over. And then there was this one mum who was like scraping dirty jelly up off the floor to smash into a child's face. And it was like, what world are you living in? You think that's what we're still doing? It was so funny. She was so in the moment. There was no taking away from like, I'm just going to get one more lot of jelly in my kid's face. Yeah, I think it's, yeah, we come up with the really, really wild and ridiculous ideas, and then sometimes we have to like rein them back to what's possible. But definitely, in terms of like the ethos and the, we do a huge amount more on sustainability now than I think we used to. We work from a woodland year round, so we feel really connected to nature, and we've talked about the power of nature quite a lot. Obviously, that means that festivals are by their nature, you know, they're temporary spaces that bring lots of people together. And so we have to kind of mitigate the impact that we have as well. And we're lucky to have a ridiculously well behaved audience in that sense, not in terms of like mischief making, but in terms of like sustainability and not dropping litter and like looking after the environment and feeling a bit more responsible. So it's great that we've got such a dedicated audience, but that we definitely feel a sense of responsibility, you know. So in terms of making all the props and decor, always trying to choose the sustainable option, always trying to look to work with people who have the same passions and enthusiasms as those. But it's so much on everybody's agenda at the minute. It's easier to find those people with those same passions and enthusiasms than it used to be. But yeah, I don't quite know how we... I think we have to tap into our inner child in terms of coming up with those ideas for what will work. You tap into your inner child and you just think, what is the most magical thing? How do we transport our audiences there?
One of the surprising things that we loved last year was the thread exchange. So, I wasn't expecting with, you know, two young boys, I didn't think they'd be very into going and swapping their clothes and choosing something else. You know, they're not very into shopping, but they absolutely loved it. So they ended up taking their old clothes and swapping it and got a top that, well, it, perhaps you could describe it better, the way that that worked.
Yeah, so we invited, so we have a tent and we invited people to bring along some items of clothing that they didn't want anymore, or what didn't fit them anymore, or and then you would, if you brought an item of clothing, you get a token, and then you could use that token to swap it for somebody else's. But the extra little thing that we asked people to do was just write a little note on about the memory of that clothing, or where it had come from, or why you, it's just, there's something about the stories that the things in our lives hold, as well as the stories that we hold. And so that idea that you could pass on a dress that, you know, you'd been given by your grandmother, or that you'd bought while you're on holiday in Greece, or that you'd found in a local charity shop and then worn to your school prom, or like that, just that the pieces of clothing that we have, our favourites, they have stories and memories. And to be able to pass on a story and a memory along with the piece of clothing felt quite exciting for us. And, you know, just and there were some amazing, brilliant stories attached to the clothing. So I don't know what the ones were that you got, Zoe.
They were wonderful. My boys ended up with a shirt that had been bought on honeymoon in Bangkok.
Oh, wow.
And a Sex Pistols t-shirt that had been worn to lots of concerts and ended up with the mom calling her son Sid.
Oh,
and it was just
brilliant.
Fantastic. But we actually donated homemade Fox t-shirts that we'd made for, as the children had made themselves to come in previous years, and the children wrote their own notes as to how they'd made them and when they, how much they'd enjoyed wearing them. And then for me, it was such a treat to then see two very little boys running around wearing them later on at the festival. It's like it had gone full circle.
That sense of sharing something with somebody else. Well, you know, that's, I mean, I've got goosebumps while you're saying that to me. I just think, oh, that's just brilliant, isn't it? You know, and we might have created the conditions for that to happen, but actually then for the audience to grasp it with, you know, and to run with it and to do it, and to do it in the sense that it was, that we'd kind of envisioned, is that's where the kind of collaboration thing comes in. You know, we can come up with an idea, but it's absolutely reliant on the audience going, yeah, we get this, we're going to do that. And then the serendipity that you then happen to see those kids running around, and then for your kids to see other kids loving the thing that they'd made. How brilliant is that?
Oh, it's just wonderful, wonderful. So what have been some of your favourite moments of the Just So?
I spent the first year when we didn't know what we were doing, I spent quite a lot of it hiding in the car park going, oh my God, I hope it's going okay. I was waving goodbye to people as they left, and as they got into their cars and they left. And a family came up to me and they were like, we've had the best time, thank you so much. And when is next year happening? And I guess that moment, the first time that an audience member said, when is next year happening? We were like, oh, this is a thing. People want it to happen again. It's like, I guess we best do it again. I guess we've been so focused on doing it once, it hadn't really even occurred to us that this was going to then be an annual thing that we were going to do. It was never like a big design or a plan. It's not like some big corporate festival where there's like a 5-year plan and we'll grow the number. It was always like, we'll do a thing and then if people like it, we'll do another thing. And so that was really, yeah, that was real kind of goosebump stuff, realising that people really wanted it to happen again. I mean, there have been brilliant moments. I would say the people are the best thing about it for me. You know, meeting like audience members, but also performers, you know, falling in love with like just these people who love doing what they're doing and are so brilliant at it, you know. Chris Bolzini, the tightrope walker, to Neil Kelso, the magician. There were dancers and singers. There were just amazing, amazing people who enrich my world. And my world is richer for having those people in it, for sure. But also, like, yeah, all the crew and, you know, the technicians and the vendors and the volunteers. And, like, what a crazy world to work in and to live in. So they're my like, share. Doing a dance with them in the forest on the Sunday night is like nearly always the highlight of my weekend. There are some absolutely crazy antics going on. But yeah, dancing in the forest with all the people who've put the festival on the Sunday night is nearly the highlight of every festival. But I mean, going to Brazil and seeing the same vision happen with an audience in an entirely different cultural context is like beyond anything we could possibly have imagined. And the producers who put it on in Brazil as well, just meeting them and finding people on the other side of the world with exactly the same passions and enthusiasms and sense of mischief and nonsense is, it's a brilliant thing, yeah.
That must have been so wonderful to see that. Fantastic. So we have a series of questions that we ask of all of our guests. So I'll just fire them at you now, if that's okay. So what would be the two things you would tell your 18-year-old self if you had the chance?
I guess I would... Oh, so many things. That's really hard, isn't it, to say what... to take the opportunities to go out and take the grasp opportunities to not... To not always, I think I always felt like there was an adult who would do the, you know, like if you wanted to like set up a business or to make something happen or to like there was somebody, an adult who in the world who would give you permission to do it. I guess feeling like you don't need to wait to be given permission.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So just to go and grasp things and to be more playful. You know, to not lose that sense of play and, mischief.
What are the three things you love to do every day? So what gives you a great routine, a good start and end to the day?
Walking. I walk in the morning and I walk at night. And if I could, if I could walk all day, I would do. I love it so much. I'm just passionate, really passionate about walking. And also reading. I adore reading and I read every night before I go to bed. I think, you know, reading offers the opportunity, books can take you to places and offer you an insight into the world that you can't get without them. So yeah, reading feels really important. And at the minute I'm doing yoga every day. I'm doing Adrienne's 30-day yoga challenge. I don't know if anyone else is.
Oh yes, but, yes, I've seen that.
I'm addicted. I've done a 30-day challenge for the last few years, and but yeah, I love a bit of yoga and relaxation. We do it together as a family sometimes as well, so that's nice.
Oh, that's nice. So what would be the one piece of advice you'd give to someone thinking of taking their kids to a festival for the very first time?
Oh, I guess to embrace the spontaneity, to not overplan. You know, let's face it, you're always going to forget stuff. You're never going to be as prepared as you want to be. It's going to be muddy. Don't forget your wellies. In fact, if there's one thing, it's just that. Don't forget your wellies. No, if it was beyond the don't forget your wellies, it would be to follow your instincts and your enthusiasm on the day, to go and see the bands that you didn't expect that you were going to love, or to wander and to like soak it all in. And as opposed to like following a strict, like, I want to see this, I want to do that. Just let that all melt away and, yeah, be a bit more spontaneous.
It's a good piece of advice for life, really.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, well, it's lovely to talk to you, Sarah. Thank you so much for joining us today, and very much looking forward to the next festival.
Thanks so much, Zoe, and it wouldn't be the same without you there.
Oh. The Just So Festival is an annual event that happens every August. You can read all about the Just So Festival on our Brummie Mummies Facebook page and on the Birmingham Live website. You can find out more about Just So by visiting the website justsofestival.org.uk or following Just So on social media. This is a laudable production brought to you by Brummie Mummies and Birmingham Live. You can download or stream the podcast on all major platforms, including Spotify and Apple. Be sure to follow our Brummie Mummies Facebook page for lots more family information. And whilst there, sign up to our free newsletter to make sure you never miss an episode. See you next time. Today's episode of Brummie Mummies has been powered by TalkTalk's Future Fibre, which is up to 23 times faster than standard broadband, proving that some things are better faster. Future Fibre is now available in Birmingham. To find out more, search TalkTalk Future Fibre. Subject to local availability.